Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. My name is Anna Nyunzima. I am the strategic lead for the Refugee Partnership. This is amazing to see everybody in the room. As a refugee myself, I thank you for being here and for your support and for your love. The Refugee Partnership was envisioned by 5 organizations, and they are Catholic Charities of Buffalo, International Institute of Buffalo, Jewish Family Services, Jericho Road Health Center, and Journey's End. Today, you will hear from... Today, you will hear, Shirley, you will hear from each of the representatives. We have each member from the organizations, and we also have Dali Gallagher from Buffalo Niagara Partnership, who will also speak today. We're going to start off with Dr. Molly Carr, who's going to share their remarks.
Thank you, Anna. I want to thank everybody for coming out today. Promised myself I wouldn't cry. This room reflects what it is to be a welcoming community here in Western New York. Yeah. Woo! We're here today because of unprecedented challenges facing newly arrived refugees and the community of caregivers who provide them support. Refugees are not immigrants, they're not asylum seekers, and they're not illegal. Refugees have a right to protection, and they have been legally vetted through the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to come to the United States. Refugees sign an agreement with the U.S. State Department that says that they will become contributing members of our community, that they will become self-sufficient, abide by our laws, and learn English. In exchange, the U.S. government guarantees 90 days of critical services that provide case management, housing, food, employment placement, school registration, and many other critical services. All of these services and direct supports that are provided in the first 90 days are funded through the U.S. foreign aid budget. On January 24th, we received a stop work order that told us we would no longer be funded to provide critical services to the 731 refugees that arrived in the past 90 days here in Western New York.
Ridiculous.
This effectively created a crisis for the most vulnerable population, people who are here without family or social safety net in the U.S. With the new administration, we knew policy changes were coming for refugee resettlement programs, and we were prepared. However, we were blindsided by funding cuts to support refugees who the U.S. government brought here in the last 90 days and promised to provide critical services. To help fill the funding gap that we are now challenged with, to support the 731 recently arrived refugees here in Western New York, we are launching the Refugee Partnership Crisis Response Fund with a goal to raise $1.5 million. We know this goal is achievable because we have seen the power and the love of the Western New York community before. I will say to donate to the Refugee Partnership for this critical fund, you can visit refugeepartnership.org or go to this QR code here next to me. This campaign will help our organizations honor the commitment that the U.S. government made to legally vetted refugees that were brought here to resettle in Western New York. This funding will allow us to fulfill the promise to help fund refugees navigate their first 90 days. We are all committed to helping these refugees assimilate to our community and begin a successful and self-sufficient path to becoming new Americans. There is a precedent for our organizations to work with our partners here in the Western New York community to show support for refugees after they arrive here. The Western New York community has rallied strong for refugees in the past, and we hope that the community will once again support the work that we are doing. I would like to, and I'm very excited to acknowledge, five local foundations who have contributed $450,000 in lead gifts to the Crisis Response Fund to get us kicked off. I would like to thank the Western New York Foundation, the Community Foundation of Greater Buffalo, M&T Bank, the Health Foundation of Central and Western New York, and the Patrick P. Lee Foundation for their generous support. Their help will ensure our agencies can fulfill our ethical and moral responsibilities, and their help will help to ensure that we can kick this campaign off successfully. I'd like to also personally thank the rabbis, the ministers, the members of the religious communities who have come out today, as well as our partners who are here and who have joined us to show their support for the refugees. Thank you. Like JFS, Journey's End is also dedicated to helping refugees become valuable part of our fabric of community here in Western New York. I would like you to please welcome Pam Boskeffi, CEO of Journey's End Refugee Services, to say a few words.
I have to start by saying I am overwhelmed by the show of support in this room. This is my America right here. And I'm incredibly grateful for the support of this network. This partnership that you've learned about today is really carrying us forward in a way that is so much more successful and powerful than if we were to do this on our own as Journey's End. So I'm really grateful to our partners on the Refugee Partnership. We cannot suspend hope. For 40 years, Journey's End Refugee Services has been a lifeline for those seeking safety and a fresh start, meeting the basic needs of our new neighbors and empowering them to rebuild their lives and contribute here in Western New York. But today we face an unprecedented challenge. The federal government has stopped funding the vital services refugees depend on. We refuse to turn our backs on those who need us the most. We are committed to supporting the integration of new Americans into Western New York. We will not let our new neighbors go homeless. We will continue to build bridges through language access. We will ensure every refugee has the opportunity to pursue citizenship with our immigration legal services, and that those who are here are able to work in a field that they are prepared for. Because this isn't just about doing what's right, it's an investment in our shared future. Refugee resettlement strengthens our local economy, enriches our communities, and upholds the very values that define us as a nation. But we cannot do it alone. We need you to stand with us. Your support today sends a clear message. Western New York welcomes refugees, and together we will not let this work stop.
Hear, hear.
Refugee resettlement is in the interest of Western New York and the United States. It is now my honor to introduce a leader in this mission, Jenny Rizzo, Executive Director of the International Institute of Buffalo.
I know all of you are gathered here today because you understand the plight of refugees, but for those that we hopefully reach farther through media, I would just like to put it out there that if you could just imagine for a moment what it's like to be placed into a country that you've never been before, where you don't know how to find food or how to use the bus or how to find a job or how to get your kids in school and start your life again. And For over a century, the International Institute has solved that problem by working with the foreign-born and with refugees and helping them integrate into their lives, as have our partner agencies standing here today. This work is vital. That is what integration means. It means getting people set up to be successful members of our community. But don't be too confused. We are not here today to discuss that value proposition, because I think everyone in this room understands that there is a value to this. We're here today to discuss the fact that the federal government made a promise and they broke that promise. The State Department promised these refugee families that they would have 90 days of support, not just in funds to pay for food and rent, but also in a case manager who would be their guide star, who would help connect them to all of those vital services. And they have dropped that funding, which means that people are left abandoned. On Friday, January 24th, we all received various communiques that said, stop work. No one in this room is stopping work. We are all trying to figure out a way to continue working on behalf of our clients and our community. And so we are very grateful. You've heard it echoed here today. We all have a moral and ethical obligation to do this work. And I'm so grateful to come from a community that feels welcoming and wants to help us in partnering on that. So thank you for that and helping us meet that goal that we've put out there today. And with that, I would like to introduce my colleague, Deacon Steve Schumer, CEO of Catholic Charities of Buffalo.
Federal, state, and local governments have relied on Catholic Charities, both here and across the country, for decades. Catholic Charities staff and volunteers do the work on the ground that government simply cannot do. As brothers and sisters in Christ, our Catholic faith calls us to love our neighbor. By extending the resources needed, we are feeding the hungry, clothing the cold, sheltering those on the street, and welcoming the stranger. Although the federal government has suspended refugee resettlement, Catholic Charities continues to fulfill our obligation to support those who arrived before the suspension took effect, helping those who arrived lawfully get a foothold on starting a new life after years of enduring the hardships of refugee camps around the world. Like our partners in this effort, we face a significant financial burden in doing this work, but not doing it would extract a much higher human cost and would leave an indelible blemish on our community. While Jericho Road Community Health Center does not specifically resettle refugees, as the other members of the partnership do, they provide essential ancillary health services for families and individuals who've recently arrived in the United States. Please welcome my dear friend and colleague, Anna Ireland Mongo, Chief Program Officer at Jericho Road.
Good morning, and thank you to all the staff who worked so hard to pull this together and to all of you who took time out of your day to come here. From the perspective of Jericho Road, as Deacon Steve mentioned, we are not a resettlement agency, but we closely overlap, work to not duplicate services, and work hard to advocate on behalf of the rights of refugees and to support the other agencies who are here. I want to take a moment to acknowledge the bravery and humanity of the people who have made their way to our country. They're individuals who have faced unimaginable challenges and yet have shown remarkable strength in their journey to seek safety. If you really think about what that means and how difficult that can be, it's inspirational. In welcoming newcomers, we're all enriched. These individuals bring with them new perspectives, new skills, new experiences, and they're transforming our city for the better. They remind us that diversity is not a buzzword, but a source of strength and innovation. Our shared humanity is what truly matters. We welcome them not just because it's economically beneficial to our community, though it is, but because they're human beings, period. Turning our backs now would break promises to uphold human rights and put our own humanity in peril. We cannot claim to value justice and compassion if we do not extend these principles to those in need. Moreover, exposure to and participation in multicultural community strengthens us all. It dismantles the walls of ignorance and fear that divides us. It forces us to confront our own biases, to question our assumptions, and to reimagine what's possible. A society that embraces refugees isn't just stronger, it's more just, more equitable, and more alive. Let us continue to reject fear and open our hearts and our doors, for in doing so, we honor our shared humanity and create a brighter future for everyone. Thank you. I want to turn it over to someone who's invested so much into building our region's brighter future. Please welcome Dottie Gallagher, President and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership.
Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to be here. I want to thank all of these warriors for the work that they're doing on behalf of people who are so vulnerable. Blessed to have a community where we have such organization and collaboration in a way that really serves people efficiently. My job here is that at the tail end of this is to really, I think, maybe give some context to the bigger picture beyond this emergency that clearly we need to support. That the importance of not only refugees but asylees and all that have legal status that come to our community to choose Buffalo as home. Is building our region in a way that we could never have anticipated before. If you take just plain math, and I love math because it rarely lies, the last census report showed that for the first time in decades, we saw population growth in this region, and it was exclusively because of people who have resettled in our area. Full stop. Our employers are grateful, very grateful, for the talents of these people who have moved to our region. They have filled, refugees have filled critical workforce gaps. You know, unlike asylees who are not able to work, refugees must work. And our employers have had a great experience. I thought, instead of reading a speech, I'd just tell you a little story. Last week I was on a tour of a manufacturer in Orchard Park who is in, part of his business is in the semiconductor industry. And there's a huge opportunity for growth in that region. You probably have heard me talk about the Federal Tech Hub designation. But anyway, I met with this company, never met these people before. I took a tour of their plant out in Orchard Park. Hard to get to Orchard Park, you know, if you're a job seeker. Mm-hmm. And he's got everything from fine hand work to big machines that require some technical skills. Don't ask me what they are, but they make some better. And I said, how are you dealing with the growth? And they have much more opportunity. They have more customers than they can. And the big challenge for them is workforce, obviously, and actually power, getting enough power to do what they need to do. And I said, how are you meeting your workforce challenge? And he said, we have a crew from Journey's End, and they're amazing. And they're a big part of how we are accomplishing this goal. And I thought that was wonderful, and particularly because it was Orchard Park, because again, we have transportation as a huge challenge here. And these are not just jobs, critical jobs in manufacturing, but hospitality, healthcare. I mean, you can go to every industry in town and see our new neighbors at work in a way that benefits all of us. And of course, they don't just go to work for other people. They open new businesses.
Right.
They get great restaurants.
Right.
We've got, you know, a lot of richness in our community. The refugees that are resettled in our community are building a better culture for our community, full stop, and is wonderful. As was stated very eloquently here, there's an infrastructure that's required to support that. And you've got the four big dogs, right? And you've got B-Bay is a part of one, and the Buffalo Peace House is a part of another. I mean, there's a whole ecosystem of support in this community that is required in order to help people cross that bridge from a very dark place where they've left their homes because of something terrible that's happened and are creating a new home here. That does not happen without the people that you see in this room, all of you, the people that we see in this room and beyond. I think if you think about this, investing in refugee resettlement is investing in our economy. It is how we are going to grow. So I want to lean in on this because there's a lot of negative rhetoric, quite frankly, racist rhetoric,
yes,
around a lot of things that are happening. And all of the people we're talking about have legal status to be in the United States and want to be here, and we want them here. So we have to do what we can do, and I commend you for standing this up, and I personally will support it and will encourage others to support the work that you're doing at this really, really difficult time for all of us. So thank you again for the opportunity to be here and to speak to the employer's wonderful need for all your talent. Thank you.
Thank you, Dottie. Thank you, Pam, Jen, Deacon Steve, Anna. I couldn't do this without your partnership. We are stronger together, just like our community here is in Western New York. Every dollar we raise is going to be integral in supporting recently arrived refugees here in Western New York. I encourage you to visit therefugeepartnership.org to make a donation today. We have our QR code here to make it easy. It is essential that the community stand with us at this time. I would like to ask all of you who have come out today to join us by signing in so that we can continue to communicate with you and let you know how things are going. This campaign will be open for 30 days. In 30 days, we are asking the community to step up and help us raise $1.5 million so that the refugees who arrived here in the last 90 days, those 731 souls, have the opportunity to stand up and become part of this community with us. Thank you for coming today. And with that, we will take questions.
Let's talk about how this has impacted the workforce. I know, Dr. Journeys, and we're hearing from Jewish Family Services, like how many jobs is this impacting?
You mean within our agencies?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The cuts are substantial, right? These are, as I said, we were planning for changes to come, and I think we all had plans on how we were to manage our workforce, but an immediate stop work order with an immediate stopping of funds has a significant impact on maintaining our workforces. So I know JFS has released 15 positions, and some of our partners up here have as well. And these are individuals who provide critical services and do it with heart and soul. And we are sad. The larger Western New York community is dependent on working with us as partners to help fill jobs so that we can continue to have a growing workforce and a growing economy.
Maki, Journey's End had to lay off 21 people. That was effective on Monday. That's 17% of our workforce. But what I want to tell you today is that many organizations came together and are hosting a job fair right now for those that we had to let go, and also for our existing staff who might be worried about future cuts. Now, it's not typical to do that for your existing staff, but we're really worried, and we want to make sure that people have an opportunity to take care of themselves. Yeah.
Leaders of these groups, some of whom make six-figure salaries, are they taking pay cuts as well?
My organization took our C-level team took a 20% pay cut.
So you're right at the top, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've got some 990s for some of these groups, at least the most recent ones available. Revenues in tens of millions of dollars for some of them. Catholic Charities, $27 million. Jericho Road, $34 million. International Institute, $6 million in revenues. Is there anything left? I mean, you're asking people to help out. I understand why you're doing, but is there anything in reserve that you can tap from these millions of dollars that you've received over the years?
Sure.
Or does it all get spent?
So, I mean, that's a very individual question for each agency, and you know, you're noting like Catholic Charities is a large organization, and Deacon Steve can talk. They do a lot of other services. Mm-hmm. I can speak for the Institute. We're very focused on immigrant and refugee services, and so a federal funding cut is significant. It's about 75% of our overall grant funding. We are very grateful and thankful that we have state funding, And I say that because I'm part of a larger network of affiliates that don't have state funding and are in states that are not hospitable to refugee resettlement. And so, you know, I've been on calls in the last 2 weeks, and those, they have already done mass layoffs of their staff. The Institute is looking at our own budget bottom line right now and trying to make those decisions. We do have state funding, we do have some reserves, and we do have an interpreting and translation service that's a small business that makes revenue for our organization. That's very mission focused. And so this is all about nonprofits figuring out, you know, how to diversify their funding streams. That way a big hit like this doesn't take them down. But obviously something that was not expected, which was the cut of funding in a current open contract,
right,
is a lot different than looking at the future and realizing that it's likely the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program is going to be suspended again a second time.
I hope you understand the point of my question. That was just to inquire whether you do have some reserves to bridge a gap in addition to what you hope people will do, because I don't imagine you want to be here every 90 days.
I'll just add that one of the other factors that we're facing is a tremendous backlog in payments from New York State. So at the time of our layoffs, we were owed $3 million by New York State. And had we had that, had we had those reimbursements, we probably wouldn't have had to do what we did at that moment in that way.
What have you been told as far as the reasoning?
Just delays in processing, or it's a complicated process. It's unclear.
That's not just a refugee settlement.
Right. It's So it's kind of a matter of doing business with New York State.
They're not cutting.
No, not that we're aware of, but it's just that if you have adequate revenue on your books, but the cash isn't coming in, it makes it hard to handle something like this when it happens.
Can you speak specifically to what money is no longer coming in? We heard about a grant freeze originally. Sounds like you're talking about a program grant cut. Where is the federal money coming in from, and where has it stopped, and where could it potentially start again?
Yeah, so the money that has been stopped that is impacting our work to support those who are already here is the critical service dollars we get for the first 90 days after a refugee arrives, right? And that's the money we use to pay for their housing, buy their beds, buy clothes, because coming to a winter environment, you need some boots, right? But also to provide case management services, help children enroll in school, help families get connected with healthcare. All of those dollars are under foreign aid budget. So while there was a release of federal funds and other programs, these funds were not released, and the folks who need those services were already here. So we needed to step in.
Could they be released at some point in the future?
Yes. Let me get my magic ball. No, I'm kidding. You know, we would love to see them released. That is totally a possibility. There are national partners who are having conversations about what they may do with court filing litigation. Because this is something that's impacting not just Western New York, but the entire country, every refugee resettlement agency across the country who has received refugees in the past 90 days. But the reality is, we as nonprofits, by the very nature of our work, do not have significant reserves so that we can step in and fill that gap in the meanwhile. And we have to pay rent now. We have to feed people now. We cannot wait for litigation or for debate about these funds being released. We have to do the services now.
I cover disability for WBFL. I'm wondering, does this impact refugees' health care at all? Has there been any impact to accessing resources? I don't know if any of them need DME or cancer treatments or anything of that sort.
Anna,
you want to jump in?
Yeah.
So right at this moment, I think we are watching and assessing that situation. It has not impacted Jericho Road in this moment, but any of the decisions related to federal funds and how those federal funds are used impacts it. But this particular thing that they are facing right now did not impact Jericho Road as far as the medical services are concerned, and we'll be continuing to work through the medical services of our partners' clients.
Going back to like what Molly and Pam were talking about, I just want to add, there's two things going on here. The thing that we're here today to talk about is the fact that folks who were in their 90-day period were dropped, and there's an immediate gap in how to provide and pay for those services, and that's hence the fundraising campaign. But then the other piece I'd like to point out is the suspension overall of the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, called USREP. That right now is a suspension with no date of resumption. So that means that while we're trying to serve and take care of the people who came in the last 90 days, we are also looking ahead and not having any more clients coming in. There are no new arrivals. No one has travel booked for any incoming future clients while the current administration reviews that program to, I believe, to review it for public safety and national security reasons. And as people have already said today, this is one of the most heavily vetted populations on the planet and has been operating without problem since 1980 in its inception.
Can I ask, has any money been spent to prepare for refugees that were supposed to come in after this order? Like, did you lose money essentially because you were trying to prepare for refugees that now cannot come in and that money was spent and you guys, like, those refugees aren't coming? Because I imagine that hurts too.
So we had spent some money, but because we all work as partners, we were able to mitigate that. So for instance, we had three families booked for travel in late January and early February, right after the inauguration, and we had moved to secure those apartments, and we were able to actually hand off some of those to our partners here. But other people can address that they had spent some funding. From our standpoint, I think the refugee partnership overall was looking ahead at a second Trump administration and thinking it was possible there would be another suspension of USRAP as he did in the first term, especially based on a lot of his tweets and statements leading up to his inauguration.
I want to add something. In terms of are people going to still receive health care and for people with disabilities who've arrived, that's a very important thing to me as well. We have other services that at this moment are intact. So we have other caseworkers who work on transitional supports, ongoing integration programming. But you know, honestly, we're feeling pretty targeted because we serve refugees and immigrants, and that negative rhetoric that has been so prominent is very concerning to us. So although we don't have any specific indication of future cuts, we definitely are concerned about that. So,
is there you mentioned the 731 that have come in within the last 90 days. I don't know if they all came in at once. I doubt it. Some might be 45 days along or 80 days along. But I'm curious as to where they came from.
Yeah.
You want that data for JFS?
Yeah. I mean, refugees come from a variety of places.
I understand that.
Right?
Was it a large group from a particular region?
Yes.
Is this a melted pot?
So it is a bit of a melted pot, but first I want to say it's not just refugees who are impacted, it's special immigrant visas. Those are individuals who have come to the U.S. because they were put at risk by providing support in Afghanistan and Iraq to U.S. forces. So as a result, they are also impacted by this stop work order. I know for JFS, we've had Afghani, Iraqi, Syrian, Ecuadorian, Congolese, Burmese refugees come in. So we've had a full spectrum of people arriving.
Among this 731, it's kind of split up.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Yes, it is.
Molly, I know you try to not conflate asylees and refugees, but if there's not money, that affects the whole operation, right? And you're dealing with asylees right now. Can you talk to the extent that the people that you're working with right now are affected by just the crunch?
So our other programs continue to operate. They have different funding streams and different objectives and priorities. It's always a balance. How much can we use what we have, our minimal amount in reserve, to fill this gap before we might impact our other programming? Everybody we serve at JFS, everybody that all of our partners serve, are receiving critical care. Now, last year, JFS had an impact of 28,000 people, Americans, refugees, asylum seekers. So it is a balance of making sure that what we do have available, while we want to make sure we are doing what's right by those refugees, we also have to keep a balance for protecting our other programs.
And on that note, Venezuelan asylees losing temporary protective status April 1st, I believe. How many people does that impact here in Western New York?
So I don't have the overall numbers for those who'd be impacted by with the withdrawal of by parole, actually it's humanitarian parole he's talking about, right? Mm-hmm. We only serve a variety, we serve people who come to us. We don't have numbers on the broader community, but at the national level, it's in the 40 to 50,000 range. So it's a very significant impact on individuals who
have come here because they've asked for protection, right? And again, they're different than refugees who were brought here with the U.S. government's blessing, but it still has a significant impact on those individuals. It will also have an impact on our workforce. A number of these individuals work throughout Western New York in different varieties, different fields. They may be the people who are, you know, cleaning up the hotel rooms or cleaning up your kids' schools. But they are here, and they are part of our workforce, and it will have an impact.
It was my understanding it was a pretty good percentage of the 500 or so asylees that you were working with that came by bus here as well. Are those people already placed in apartments?
Yes.
And would they, then what happens if they have to go back to Venezuela? No.
You know, those are, I don't want to conflate the stories, really.
Right.
But that work is done. And those individuals, you know, just like everybody else, will have individual stories to tell.
Can someone explain what the $1.5 million actually will do? Is that like covering rent? Is that direct payment? Is it for the workers? Like, what will that actually pay for?
No. Yes, all of those things that you just listed. This is going to make sure that the families receive all of the services that they deserve to have, like every other refugee that's come through the pipeline. And it will also cover all of the administrative expenses that we have incurred, which will help maintain our stability moving forward.
Okay.